Nice. And everything was just too perfect in her world. Have a blowout, her friend had said flippantly, looking glad to be rid of her as she rose to leave. Get drunk, have a shag, and then get back to normal for everyone's sake. A night of single life will make you realize just how lucky you are. It seemed like fate when she found the invite to debauchery in her handbag later that night. Her cheeks puffed as she exhaled a heavy breath. Being unfaithful and then an abortion? Was she strong enough to go through with it all? It made her heart ache to think of the growing baby inside her, already equipped with DNA, a little bit of her and Steve. She picked up the test and stared at the double blue line. Dropping it into the bin, she reminded herself to be strong. Soon she would return to her old life, the one that held no promises and even less hope. Returning her attention to her laptop, she typed an instant message confirming her illicit date. Matthew had come with positive feedback. An ordinary guy who would see to her every need. Paying on Steve's credit card made a nice touch. What a bitch, Abby thought. Financial as well as emotional abuse. She wiped her cheek as a tear made a path down her heavy foundation. She had paid extra for the brand because it hid the scar running down her cheek. But some wounds you could never heal. She had been stupid to lower her walls of defense, and had warned Steve she would hurt him in the end. And now she had, in the worst way possible. Her finger hovered over the green button. With one click, she determined her fate. Her computer made a whooshing sound as she finally pressed send. Chapter 47. Laura, good to hear from you. I've been thinking about what you said. What's that? Laura said, her heart picking up a beat in her chest. Matthew's voice crept across the phone line like a millipede, driving a chill up her spine. Since her meeting with the rest of the team at Sanity Line, she had begun to relax. But hearing him speak brought back all the old feelings of dread. Why did she agree to work late? Would he be standing in the shadows, waiting for her to finish her shift? Steadying her breath, she tried to focus on the call. But helping such a disturbed mind seemed too big a task. Matthew seemed brighter today, bordering on cheerful. You told me to examine my hatred towards people who cheat. I've been thinking about it a lot. You're a bright girl, Laura, probably brighter than people give you credit for. So what did you come up with? Laura said, trying to keep the onus off her. She bit into the fullness of her lip, her heart racing in her chest. Across the way, Joseph rose to put the kettle on. Giving him the thumbs up, Laura responded to his gesture to ask if she wanted tea. She placed her hand over the receiver, taking a deep breath as she willed herself to calm down. For now, Matthew was reposeful, and in the background the low drawl of country music played. Laura pressed her phone tightly to her ear to try to decipher his location. Was it a radio, television, or was he in a bar? She jumped as Matthew's voice boomed down the line. I've been thinking about my past. Perhaps I have my father to thank. Would you like to talk about that? Laura said, grabbing a pen to take forbidden notes. If she could not trace his location, perhaps his background would provide a clue. A surge of excitement bubbled up inside her. Yes, this was dangerous, but it was exciting too. She imagined her uncle's face as she provided him with answers. She could do this. She had to. My mother did her best, Matthew said. She was away a lot for work while Dad stayed at home to look after me. Sometimes she'd be gone overnight, sometimes the whole weekend. My parents were wealthy. I didn't go without, but my father couldn't stay faithful for very long. And you were witness to this? Laura said, quickly glancing around before scribbling on her pad. Joseph smiled as he placed a cup of tea on her desk, the persistent ring of his telephone calling him away before he could glance at her notes. I saw everything from a very early age. They weren't business colleagues he brought home either. They were hookers, flea-bitten slags. He did things to those women that you wouldn't believe. Matthew exhaled a bitter laugh. But don't worry, I won't taint your innocent ears. Was he telling the truth, Laura wondered, or fabricating an explanation in the hope she would see him in a better light? She tried to listen for clues in the background, but the music had died, and all she could hear was Matthew's breathing as he paused for thought. I used to watch them, you know, he said. Sometimes he would have two or three at a time. He called it letting off steam. He didn't care if I saw them. He was off his face on coke by then.
I'm sorry to hear that, Laura said, scribbling his words down.
Matthew continued to speak, without acknowledging her response. He took a breath, exhaling it slowly, as if the act required more effort than he was able to give. As I got older, the visits continued. Then I began to wonder if my mother knew, if her time away was to give him the outlet he needed, because she would not give in to his demands.
That's a lot of big thoughts for such a young person, Laura said, as Matthew fell quiet. Did you have any family members you could confide in?
Matthew sighed. I was too ashamed. As I grew older, their visits became oddly fascinating, and sometimes...
Go on, Laura encouraged.
Sometimes they tried to get me to join in. I can still hear the sound of my father's laughter as they yanked down my trousers, my cheeks burning with humiliation. They revolted me, all of them. I didn't know where to turn.
When did it stop? Laura said,
resisting the urge to question his identity. When my parents divorced, I thought things would get easier, but I still carried a lot of anger inside. Mum got me a therapist, and for a while it helped. But I can't seem to move on from the past.
Have you tried speaking to your dad?
Laura said, thoughts of Mason Gatley firmly in her mind. He's not around anymore. My biggest regret is not confronting him at the time.
That must have been awful for you, growing up like that, Laura said.
But in truth, she had little sympathy for the man on the other end of the line. Uncle Owen was depending on her. Nobody was safe until the killer was caught. She gripped her pen, trying to gather the courage to ask if Mason Gatley was his dad. When someone's unfaithful, nobody asks the rest of the family how they feel, Matthew said. But I care, and I'm going to make it stop. Laura nibbled on the tip of her pen, wondering for the 100th time if he was being honest. At points during his conversation, he seemed sincere, heartfelt. But other times, as his voice waned, she wondered if he had veered from the truth.
Did you tell your mum how you felt?
She'd been hurt enough. We both were. Besides, Mum couldn't bear to look at me because I reminded her of him. A door opened and closed in the background as Laura heard Matthew move from one room to another. He cleared his throat, his words still trailing down the phone. Then I found myself in a place with like-minded people. For the first time in my life, it was like I belonged. I met a man like me, who understood how I felt. We made plans. I knew what I had to do.
Who was it? A relation? A friend? Someone who lived nearby?
Laura said, cursing her inability to ask a direct question. But even across the phone line, his presence intimidated her. Her uncle's words played on her mind. Had Matthew really killed those women? Throttled them until the air left their lungs? Laura's fingers found the base of her throat as his response was returned. He was my only friend. Well, apart from you, Matthew chuckled. He's Mason Gatley. I thought you would have guessed that by now. His voice slowed to a crawl. Don't you know who I am?
You're Matthew, Laura said,
clutching the phone so tightly her fingers began to ache. That's not my real name, he said. But you know that already, don't you? So why don't you just come out and ask me who I am?
Chapter 48.
Mr. Forbes, I'm afraid I can't spare you a lot of my time, Ruby said, feeling harried as she brushed a strand of hair from her face. I'm sorry to hear about your wife's disappearance, but DC Ludgrove will be dealing with this.
I know, which is why I've insisted on talking to you. And please, call me Steve.
Steve Forbes was nothing but insistent, having come to the front counter of Shoreditch Police Station, demanding to speak to her alone. But she could hardly afford the time. Come in here, Ruby said, leading him to an empty interview room. She stood with the door open slightly, distracted by the cacophony of voices on the other side. The police station was a hive of activity today, which only served to increase the pressure even more. At the other side of the door, a wailing toddler's cries pierced the air, while his mother complained loudly of her husband's arrest. The place stank of stale alcohol, which was carried on the breath of a small group of homeless people waiting to be seen. Pressing her back against the door, Ruby pushed until it clicked shut, and turned to the man with an inquiring glance. "What can I do for you?" she said, knowing it was quicker to get this inquiry out of the way than to argue as to why he had kicked up such a fuss. As much as she would have liked to discuss his wife's disappearance, she had 100 other things demanding her attention. The police sketch artist for Thomas Crawley, for one. Steve half sat on the interview room table, declining Ruby's offer to take a seat. Unlike the queue of people waiting at the front counter, he was dressed in a suit and tie. Carrying an air of self-assurance, he looked Ruby squarely in the eye. "If you're investigating Abby's disappearance, it means there's something seriously wrong. I want you to tell me what that is." "With all respect," Ruby said, mildly annoyed at being pulled out of her inquiries. "We have our reasons for being involved, and that's not something I can share at this time."
"You can tell me," Steve said. "I'm an ex-copper myself, served 5 years on the force before being kicked out. I know they don't like calling it the force these days, but it felt very much like it when I got the elbow."
Ruby tilted her face to one side as she examined his features. The strong jawline, his tightly clipped brown hair.
"I thought I recognized you. Have we worked together?"
"Only briefly," Steve replied, with a half-shouldered shrug. "I didn't expect you to remember me. But I know something's going on here, and I'm not leaving until I know what it is."
Ruby did not appreciate the hint of arrogance in his tone. Ex-police officers were a pain in the neck when it came to being victims of crime. "Given your experience, you'll be well aware of the reasons why I can't give you full disclosure. Is that what got you kicked out in the end? Information sharing?" Her eyes raked over his form for clues. Steve was groomed, wearing expensive cologne and a designer watch. For someone who had been sacked, he appeared to be managing well.
"It was an inappropriate relationship, actually," he said, maintaining eye contact. "My wife was a victim of historic sexual abuse. I was the officer in charge of her case. The job took a dim view of me seeing her in work time. I was given an ultimatum, and I chose her. It was the biggest favour anyone could have done me."
It was a situation Ruby could empathise with, being constantly faced with a similar choice herself. The difference with Ruby was that Nathan was not a vulnerable victim, and her superiors weren't involved.
"A favour? How do you work that out?" Ruby asked, temporarily forgetting the urgency of her case.
Because the job made me choose, and I chose Abby. We married 6 months ago. I won't say it's been easy, but up until now, life has generally served me well.
So what do you do now? As an occupation, I mean, Ruby said, her thoughts on the killer's previous victims who had all been financially secure. How would an ex-police officer gain wealth in such a short space of time?
A hint of a smile touched Steve's lips. It was as if he were waiting to be asked the question all along.
I invented an app. It's something I was working on while I was still in the police. Getting the sack made me make some big life changes. Investing in my product and getting it to market was one.
Steve seemed to absorb Ruby's curious glance as he explained the invention that had brought him so much wealth.
It's a personal security app. You can use it on any smartphone to track your loved ones. The user can call the police by voice command, even use code words if they need to. Helps people sleep a little more soundly when their children or loved ones are out alone.
Sounds a bit stalkerish to me. What's it called? Ruby asked.
Companion Keeper, Steve replied, a touch of smugness in his smile.
Ruby raised her eyebrows. Not only had she heard of the app, but it was one that the force recommended to victims of crime. No wonder he was looking happy with himself. She knew the creator had made a fortune when it first hit the market, and it came as standard on some brands of phone.
I take it your wife isn't using it, Ruby said, genuinely perplexed. How strange that given the nature of his invention, his wife had disappeared.
That's what makes this so odd, Steve said, his smile fading. Abby always uses it because she knows how worried I get. She'd have had to go to a lot of trouble to disable it from her phone.
And you watch her night and day? Ruby asked, small alarm bells ringing in her head. Steve folded his arms.
The app just runs in the background. I'm not constantly checking her whereabouts, but it does reassure me to know that she's safe.
And does she do the same with you? Ruby said. Check your whereabouts on her phone.
I work from home, and I don't socialize without her.
Steve's face creased in a frown, his voice becoming terse.
This isn't a domestic abuse case. I've come here looking for help.
Ruby drew back on her line of questioning, reminding herself of his concerns. I'm just trying to get a clearer picture of your relationship. If you're saying that this is uncharacteristic, then it's something we need to take into account. Did you have any arguments before she went missing?
I know exactly why she left, Steve said. But it's more to do with her past than with me.
The vibration of Ruby's phone told her she was in demand. She should leave this to Luddy to investigate, but she had a feeling that the conversation may be of value. She could not walk out now. Steve crossed his ankles as he leaned against the table.
Abby's had an horrific childhood, but she didn't report it until 2 years ago. She warned me that she'd end up hurting me when we first got together. It's a safeguard mechanism. Do the worst before the worst happens to you.
And you think her disappearance is related to how she's feeling? Ruby said, the backs of her legs growing tired from standing up.
It could be, Steve replied, twiddling his wedding ring on the finger of his left hand. Abby was unfaithful on the night before our wedding. The next morning she told me what she'd done.
That can't have been easy to hear, Ruby said.
It was hard, but I forgave her. I know she got no enjoyment from it. Sex is just a tool she uses to push me away.
God, he said, driving his fingers through his hair. I don't know why I'm telling you all this. I only came in to report she'd not come home.
It might help, Ruby said, her weariness forcing her to lean against the door. Steve nodded, encouraged.
After the wedding, she was really happy. Then a fortnight ago, we had a good result with the court case against her parents. She was turning her life around. But now this... His words grew thick with emotion.
It's starting all over again. She's arranged to meet some guy called Matthew on a date in sight.
Matthew, Ruby said, a chill snaking down her spine. Up until now, it had seemed like this was just another regular missing person case.
How do you know?
I found messages on her laptop. The thing is, she left them open for me to read.
He risked a glance at Ruby.
I bet you think I'm a right doormat. But at the end of the day, it's just sex. That's not important to me. Compared to Abby, it holds barely any meaning at all.
Ruby nodded in understanding. Her phone vibrated in her pocket, but she could not draw away from the story unfolding before her.
What else do you know about who she's gone to meet?
Not much, Steve said. I only saw screenshots of their emails. Now I'm pretty clued up when it comes to computers, and from what I could see, they were like Snapchat, messages that were set to self-destruct. She would have had only seconds to take a screenshot before they disappeared. And before you ask, there's no meeting place or times, just the name Matthew and what seems like a date in sight. The infidelity I can deal with, it's the rest of it.
His voice broke away and he cleared his throat.
What else? Ruby said. She was all too aware of the dangers that Abby could be finding herself in, but Steve's knowledge was something new.
It was in the bathroom, the real reason why she's doing this. She'd try to hide it, but I know my wife and I went looking. I wasn't prepared for what I found.
Which was? Ruby said, ignoring the tannoy in the hall persistently calling her name.
Steve looked at her imploringly.
She's pregnant. Abby's pregnant. You've got to find her before she does something stupid. I need to tell her that everything's okay.
Chapter 49 Ruby sat in the briefing room, feeling like she had been punched in the gut. She stood with her team in the airless space that was only ever too hot or too cold. Each evidence board bore the status of the investigation to date. CCTV stills pinned next to crime scene locations, along with the details of suspects whose alibis had been checked. On another board, disturbing images of their victims as, trapped and tortured, they waited for help that would never come. Ruby's breath caught in her chest. She could not bear for another picture to be added to this lineup. None of Mason Gatley's victims were pregnant. Just how would Abby's pregnancy affect this case? She relayed Steve's visit to the rest of the team. The thought of not just one victim losing their lives, but two, was too devastating to contemplate. Their relationship was a strange one. Steve had taken ownership of a traumatized and vulnerable young woman while being in a position of trust.
Can we delve into Steve's history while we're at it? Ruby said, adding to their long list of tasks. For the team, it was easy to see why he faced dismissal for what he did. The fact that Abby had been unfaithful once before danced in Ruby's thoughts. Had Steve really gotten over her infidelity, as he had said? To watch your partner so closely, to constantly monitor their day. Like all abusers, he believed his actions were normal, yet he was fully aware of how it looked to the police. Such behaviour was commonplace in domestic abuse cases that she had dealt with in the past. Ruby needed to find Abby, not just to keep her safe, but to ask why she had run away. It was odd to think of someone being unfaithful and then returning to their fiancé the day before their wedding and confessing all. Was Steve's hold over her so tight that she was unable to escape? And now, a pregnancy. The fact that Steve was an ex-police officer could have made her feel there was nowhere to turn. It seemed Ruby was not the only person with such thoughts, as DC Eve Tanner tentatively raised her hand. She dropped it as Ruby acknowledged her, resting it back on her bump. Eve's pregnancy was progressing to mid-term, and the latest development would hit her hard.
You
mentioned screenshots of Abby's conversation, yet any useful details have been cut out, Eve said.
Go on, Ruby encouraged.
Steve said his wife wants him to know what she's done. It seems strange that she screenshot the conversation but kept the details private of where she's hooking up.
Maybe she didn't want to be interrupted, Letty said.
Maybe, Eve replied. Or maybe all of this is a ploy to make us think she went on a date. What if they're role-playing and Steve is the one who turns up? You said it yourself that she's been unfaithful before. Maybe he's killed our victims, then decided to get to the root of the problem. What if all of this has been about getting revenge all along?
Ruby's head swam with conflicting thoughts. As soon as Steve was told serious crime were involved, he kicked up a stink to speak to her alone. Why would he do that unless he was genuinely worried about his wife? He was not hiding the intricacies of their relationship. Unless it was one big bluff. From ex-copper to serial killer? I'm not sure about that, Downs said. I suppose it would explain why he's given us the slip so far. But the good news is we have DNA. Crime scene investigators have picked up saliva on Thomas Crawley's face. We believe the killer has been using wet wipes to clean his other victims, as traces of chemicals were found on Cheryl and Melissa's skin. Looks like he didn't have time with Thomas, although he's kept his wedding ring. If Steve's a suspect, then his DNA would be on our database from when he joined the police, wouldn't it? Letty said. I'm afraid not, Downs replied. As per policy, it's been destroyed. What about the sketch artist? Ruby said, clinging on to a vestige of hope. He must have produced something by now. Downs shook his head. It's not good news. Thomas Crawley suffered from a stroke and is in intensive care. He won't be talking to anyone for some time. Ruby pursed her lips, trying to contain the swear words building up in her throat. Why didn't she take a more detailed description when they'd had the chance? She thought back to his pallid complexion, the pain crossing his face. Had their visit contributed to the stress that caused his illness? She arched her back as it delivered a dull throb of pain. There were so many people involved. Soon she would need a spreadsheet to keep check of them all. Yet at the beating heart of this investigation was a pregnant woman who had already been through so much. To have her life end like this, just when she was beginning to claw it back, was more than Ruby could bear. As if reading her mind, Downs spoke. Right, I know there's a lot to get through, but here's an overview of where we are so far. Melissa Sherman, Cheryl Barber, and Thomas Crawley are linked socially through parties they've attended, and the invites for Debauchery, an online dating site. It's vague as to how they've received the invites, but there's an online code which brings them directly to Matthew Johnson's profile page. Downs pointed to the board, his fingers hovering over the crime scene picture of Matthew's bloated body. DC Moss has been working with the tech unit, and Matthew's page has now been closed down. How have you got on with your background inquiries on these social events? He looked pointedly at Luddy, having heard of his recent visit to Hannah Phillips, Cheryl's friend. Luddy gazed up from his notes. We've spoken to a good 70% of people that move in the same circles. Nobody's saying anything, and CCTV of the golf club has produced nothing so far. Keep looking, Downs replied. See what links Abby to our previous victims? Someone knows more than they're letting on. Ruby glanced around the room. Double shifts and cancelled rest days were taking their toll on her team. She knew that somewhere in the hundreds of items seized, statements taken, and CCTV to be viewed, therein their answers lay. But time was their biggest enemy, and she had to go straight to the source. Like an arrow, her thoughts focused on the person with the motive and capabilities to carry out such vicious acts. Right, what about our persons of interest? He said, pointing to a picture of Mason's son, James. We know that Mason is homophobic. James has issues. How did you get on with the CCTV of him coming to and from work?
I've requested it, but I've not had the chance to follow it up, Luddy said.
Richard, can you deal with that? Down said. Luddy's got enough on his plate for now. Ruby nodded in agreement. James had refused to provide a voluntary interview. They had only held off arresting him so they could keep an eye on his movements.
Do it today, she said. Find out when he's last visited his father. Look at his friends and family members to make sure he wasn't communicating through them.
We've gone as far back as the last year, Luddy said. No visits either in prison or where he is now.
Downs turned his attention onto DC Ludgrove.
Maybe not as himself, but it's possible he's posing as someone else. Our killer's a chameleon, no stranger to taking other people's identities. James is currently a person of interest, but if you can find a shred of evidence to raise it to suspicion, then he's coming in.
Chapter 50 The Night Before. From the first minute he met Abby, Matthew knew she was different. The bubbly and giggly Melissa had done this sort of thing before, while Cheryl was nervous and easy to dominate. As for Thomas, he was just an idiot with luck on his side. But Abby, she carried an air of mild aggression that set him on edge. His efforts in persuading her to dabble in drugs had been fruitless. Her long black hair had shone beneath the flashing lights of the nightclub, her body pulsating to the music until her skin glistened with sweat. Matthew had not been able to resist the club after reading its description online. Cargo promised the ultimate in late-night debauchery with DJs and dancing to boot. But dancing was not the only thing on Abby's mind. After finding a dark corner, she had pressed herself onto him with a sense of frenzy, before demanding he take her to the hotel. After pushing through the sweaty bodies, they made their way outside. But when they walked beneath Kingsland's viaduct to catch a cab on Shoreditch High Street, a cold, ominous feeling made itself known. What if he got caught? He would rather die than face imprisonment. Sweat beaded his brow while he stood on the pavement, fear twisting his gut as heavy-footed pedestrians pushed past. How had he expected to get away with it? It was central London, for God's sake. There was CCTV everywhere. A red double-decker bus rumbled by, making him blink as a gush of warm night air blasted against his face. His near miss with Thomas had unnerved him. Should he cut his losses and choose again, or carry on? The question seemed to answer itself as Abby's fingers laced through his. Pulling him towards the taxi, she flashed him a cautious smile, instructing him to get inside. The sight of two armed policemen in the distance made his heart skitter in his chest. Jumping in beside her, he told himself not to be stupid. The streets had been heavily policed since the terrorist attack. After blurting out the hotel address, he sat forward on the back seat, a trickle of sweat rolling down his back. Abby's silence in the cab was in stark contrast to her behaviour just minutes before. He observed her twirling her wedding ring, her hands jittery, as if moving without thought or instruction. The silence was maintained until they got to the hotel. Matthew's thoughts were one step ahead. By checking in that afternoon, he had hidden his rucksack to save any awkward questions later. He congratulated himself on his foresight. She was obviously the sort of person who would notice these things. The thought gripped his intestines as they strolled down the hotel corridor to their room. Could she be a police officer? Yet she was wearing so little, dressed in a pair of sequin hot pants and a sleeveless black vest. Her jewellery dictated wealth, but these things could be easily replicated. Once inside, Abby slammed the door behind them and hungrily pressed her body against his.
He stiffened as the force of her passion banged the back of his head against the door. Briefly, he accepted her kiss before drawing away, a frown crossing his face.
"What's wrong?" she said.
Matthew swiped the remnants of her lip gloss from his mouth.
"Are you a cop?"
"It's just that the site is run underground and we don't need any involvement from..." Abby threw back her head and laughed. It was a loud, shrill noise, followed by a snort as tears welled up in her eyes. If she was acting, she played her part well.
"Police?"
she tittered, bringing her fingers to her eyes and wiping the wetness away.
"You're joking, aren't you?"
"A journalist, then," he said, hating the doubt in his voice. How dare she laugh at him? She was the one in the wrong, and he despised the way she made him feel. He thought of a time in his life when such laughter was commonplace. But it was not a merry laugh. It was a sly and shallow amusement gained from his humiliation. His anger burned. He would make her pay for this.
"Why on earth would I be either? What would they want to do with the dating site?"
Abby asked. She had already told him she did not read newspapers or watch current events on TV. If there was something to be concerned about, she would be the last person to know.
"Besides, I was invited."
She paused to take in his expression.
"Why are you so mad? Have you done something wrong?"
She curled her arm around his waist.
"I do like a bad boy,"
she whispered in his ear, before driving her tongue inside. Matthew gasped. He had never felt so disarmed by one person. He needed to get on with things, make things right. Clasping her left ring finger, he put it in his mouth and sucked hard. Now it was her turn to look surprised. He pushed her back on the bed. "Just checking," he said, as he clambered on top of her. "I like to know who I'm fucking."
"Just a piece of married totty," she said, the laughter evaporating from her voice as she tugged at his belt buckle. "Now, are you going to get on with it or what?"
Matthew reached into his pocket. "We've got all night. How about a bit of pre-sex coke?"
"I told you a million times I don't do drugs," Abby said. "Are you on commission or something? Because if you don't get your kit off, I'll be giving you a one-star review."
Sex with Abby was the last thing Matthew wanted. Forced into a corner, he tried to work out his next move. He was not ready for this. He was never ready for this. He had come here intent on making her pay. "How about we play a game?" he said, as Abby fiddled with the catch of his trousers. He could tie her up with her permission, then gag her when he had control.
"How about you screw me like you've been paid to do?"
Abby sneered, her hands clasping his buttocks.
"Because I'm not into playing games."
There it was again, that underlying current of anger. Just what was she up to? His outrage grew as she squirmed beneath his weight.
"You stupid slut,"
he spat, stilling her movements. "Do you really think I'd lower myself to sleep with you?"
"But we came here for sex,"
Abby replied, her eyes wide with astonishment.
"The sight
was just a tool to bring you here. I was hoping we could do this the easy way, but now I've got to shut you up."
The words were delivered in a growl. He drew back his clenched fist. His blood felt on fire as it raced through his veins.
"No!"
Abby screamed.
"Please!"
But her words were cut short as Matthew's punches rained down. Chapter 51. A low, guttural sound rose from Abby's throat as a wave of pain hit her with force. Every muscle in her body seemed to cry out in pain. She took a deep breath through her nostrils, the sticky, sickly smell making her gag. It was tangy,
almost like rust, and was followed by a sharp, searing pain in her hand, which was bound tightly behind her back. Last night had gone wrong, horribly wrong, and she realized with horror that she was trussed from her neck to her ankles. Each jerk of her wrists pulled her limbs backwards, each movement of the rope tearing into the flesh around her throat. Biting down on the rag, she caught her tongue between her teeth, swallowing the trickle of warm blood that followed. But the pain of a split tongue was nothing compared to the white-hot agony searing from her left hand. Blinking, she struggled to cope with the invasion of senses. Her breath froze as she caught sight of Matthew, watching her intently from his wing-back chair. Leaning against the wall, a piece of white card caught her attention. Splashed across it in deep red was one word, sinner. Abby gulped back her tears. She wanted to cry, but shock had pervaded her system. It was all too surreal. "I had to use red marker this time," Matthew said, following her gaze. "There were too many letters to write it in blood." A freakish smile froze on his face, his eyes barely blinking as they drank in her form. He seemed to be taking great pleasure from her distress, absorbing her muffled cries with obvious delight. "Are you sure you wouldn't like to take the drugs now?" Blocking out the pain, Abby withdrew into herself, just as she had done so many times before. The beatings in her childhood never made much sense. Equally, there was little point in trying to understand the motives of the man before her. She knew when she met her husband that her life would end badly, because happy endings didn't exist for girls like her. She remembered her father's cruel words as he tore into her room, the stink of beer on his breath. "You can scrub your skin clean, but you never remove the dirt from deep inside." Because that's what she was. Dirty. Something to be used and disposed of afterwards. People like her didn't lead normal lives, much less die a peaceful death. Abby closed her eyes, relinquishing herself to the situation. Then she remembered what brought her here in the first place. Her baby. The tiny heart beating inside her seemed to strengthen her own. A flame lit from within. She had more than just herself to think about, and this baby had come from love. Just what had gotten into her when she booked a termination? Was this her punishment? Forcing her breathing to calm, Abby focused on the man before her. He was representative of everyone in her life that had hurt her. Her drunken parents, the teachers who did not listen, and the care workers who abused her when she was finally taken in. She would not go quietly. She had someone to fight for. A tiny little person who was better than her. Matthew surveyed her curiously, his head tilted to one side. It was as if he could see the internal struggle taking place, and he regarded her with caution as he approached. "You look so lovely lying there. How about I take your picture?" he said, his phone in his hand. But Abby's thoughts were ticking over, trying to make sense of it all. She thought of the night before and how he had refused to have sex. How he had drawn back his fist and punched her to the side of the head. Her gaze returned to the piece of board where he had written the word sinner, and she recalled the dating website, the one set up for married people to use. She made a quick assumption of his motives. She needed to play against the persona he had created for her in his head. He raised his phone to use its camera, disappointment etched on his face when she refused to scream or cry. Abby forced her face in a neutral expression and stared blankly ahead. "Don't you realize what I'm going to do?" His breath was hot on her skin as he lowered his face to hers. "I'm going to tighten the rope around your neck until you stop breathing." Still, he waited before taking the snap.
Why aren't you afraid? What's wrong with you? Can you feel your finger? Because it's not there anymore. His eyes darted left and right as he searched her face for a reaction. Such a thought was enough to invoke a scream of terror, but Abby simply froze. She despised this man with all of her heart, and she would not give in. Her throbbing hand, her aching muscles, and the terrifying threat that was being made, she pushed them all aside, focusing on the two words that could turn everything around. Calmly, Abby tried to speak, but the cloth in her mouth muffled her words. "Be sensible," Matthew said, tugging on the frayed material. "If you scream, I'll finish you here and now."
"I'm pregnant,"
Abby blurted, delivering her words with haste.
"Why would you?"
She gasped for breath.
"Why would you kill an innocent baby? None of this is their fault."
There was a loud clunk as Matthew's phone fell to the floor.
"You're lying," he said, stepping back as if she were diseased. "You can't be."
"Why do you think I wouldn't drink or take drugs? I got scared when I found out I was pregnant. I came out on a date for one last fling. I know it was wrong, I shouldn't have done it, but my baby doesn't deserve to pay the price."
"No," Matthew said, "you can't be.
I don't believe you."
With each sentence, he took a step backwards, his eyes wide with disbelief.
"Look in my bag,"
Abby croaked, grateful that she had kept one of the many tests she had taken the day before. She thought about the one she had thrown in the bathroom bin. Had Steve found it? Guilt and shame surged through her. What had she been thinking of coming here? She could not bear for him to go through the pain of losing both a wife and a baby, should she die today. His hands shaking, Matthew rifled through her bag, throwing makeup and tissues onto the floor. His fingers found a plastic holder the size of a pen in the crumpled cardboard box she had kept. She had not thrown it out because a small part of her didn't want to lose this baby, even then. She was certain of it now. Right now, her baby was the most important thing in the world.
"No!"
he shouted, staring at the test. Ripping open the instructions, he glared at it before returning his attention to the blue cross in the middle.
"Please," Abby said, fighting the biting pain. "Don't hurt my baby."
She closed her eyes, whispering what she could remember of the Lord's Prayer. It was a cheap test, only cost a couple of pounds, but there was a small chance it may have just saved her life. Chapter 52. Taking a deep breath, Ruby drew in the late spring air. It was good to see daylight. So much of her time was spent in her office, with her window opened a crack as the sounds of traffic and pedestrians rose up from below. Standing in the station car park, she blinked against the sun, taking in a few more seconds of daylight before returning inside. As her eyes adjusted to the gloomy corridor, she barely noticed the desk assistant coming towards her at full pelt. Pink-faced and smiling, the woman stood with her hands on her hips, catching her breath. She reminded Ruby of a sprite, with her sky-blue eyes and cropped blonde hair. But it was at odds with the accent that grated on her tongue.
"Here, Sergeant Preston, I put a shout out over the tannoy, but the blooming thing's on the blink."
"Everything all right?" Ruby said, giving the woman a comical look. She was new to the post and tended to get herself into a flap.
"There was a witness. He came in asking to speak to the person in charge of the case. I said, which case? And he said he had information about someone going around lobbing off women's ring fingers. Straight away, I thought of you and told him to wait."
She paused for breath, her East London accent adding colour to her words.
"Anyways, when I turned round to call someone, he'd only gone and left. He's not gone far if you want to catch him.
I think that's unlikely, Ruby said. By the time I check the CCTV, he'll be long gone.
Just go out the front and turn left.
Oh! She touched her forehead.
I didn't tell you, did I? He's a priest, not that old either. About early 30s, dark hair, a bit tall and gangly.
Come on then, Ruby said as she followed her down the corridor. Lead the way. Just a minute later, Ruby had found him. In his black trousers and shirt, his priest's garb stood out from the crowd. He glanced at her curiously as she followed him down the street.
Sorry, Father, can I trouble you for a minute? She said, falling into step beside him.
What can I do for you? He said, looking her up and down. A spot of rain touched Ruby's face, and she pulled her blazer around her. The weather was changeable, as if it could not decide if it were winter or spring.
My name is D.S. Ruby Preston. I'm the officer in charge of the case you were asking about.
She paused, reading the confusion on his face.
You came into the station. I saw you on CCTV.
It was a lie. She'd not yet had time to view it, but she did not want to give him the excuse to back out a second time.
Father McElroy, he said, extending a hand as he introduced himself.
You can call me Isaac. But I'm sorry, I've changed my mind. I can't help you after all.
Please, Father, Ruby said, still gripping his hand. Come back to the station with me. You came in for a reason.
She released his fingers as she realized she was holding on a little too tight.
I'm sorry, he said. I want to help you, but I can't risk my vocation. If I tell you what I know, then I'll be thrown out of the church.
This isn't the right place to talk about it, Ruby said, as shoppers dodged them on the busy streets.
Please, give me 5 minutes of your time, if only to explain.
Following her back, he was led into a witness interview room as he explained the reason behind his earlier visit. The room comprised a desk, computer, 2 chairs, and some posters about Neighbourhood Watch on the walls. Windowless and compact, it was a temporary but private space.
I shouldn't have come.
Isaac shook his head. Even if I could tell you, I can't break the sacramental seal.
Let's start again, Ruby replied, taking a seat at the interview table and gesturing at Isaac to do the same. How do you know so much about the case?
Resigning himself, the priest pulled out a chair and sat.
I provided confessions to one of my flock. But what he told me, it shook me to the core.
So you came here to help us? Ruby leaned forward across the table, her eyes on Isaac's.
The desk assistant said you had knowledge of amputations. What else do you know?
The man I spoke to seems like a disturbed soul, Isaac said sadly. Sometimes I sit at the back of the church and meditate. It can be enlightening, picking up on people's prayers. This man had been in several times and he seemed very torn. So, one day, I slid into the pew beside him and offered guidance. I gathered he must be in trouble of some kind. I'm quite new to the priesthood, as you might have guessed. He smiled. But I like to think that people can relate to me.
What did he say? Ruby said, picturing the scene.
Nothing at first. I offered to take his confession, which he accepted. He unburdened his soul by confessing his sins in the sacrament of penance. But with such sacrament, a sacred trust is formed. No court in the land can force me to disclose what was said.
It must have been bad for you to come here and risk breaking the seal, Ruby said, trying to work out a way in which she could prize the information from him. You do know we're dealing with a serial killer, don't you?
The priest quietly responded with a knowing nod of the head. Silence fell between them as they contemplated the seriousness of their words.
He's kidnapped another victim, Ruby said. This doesn't just involve her,
There's an unborn baby's life at risk, too. Again, another nod of the head. Ruby drummed her fingers on the table before bringing her attention to the computer. She clicked on the mouse, her actions lighting the screen up before her. All we want to do is find them and keep them safe. You can tell me anonymously. I'll log it as intelligence. A description. An address. Please give me something. Help me save his next victim. Surely you have to think of her and her baby, too.
I wanted to help you. It's why I came here earlier today.
Isaac's face creased as he relayed his frustration.
But it's too big a risk. People rely on me. I have to think of the rest of my flock.
Wait, Ruby said, logging onto the system and turning the screen around to face them both. She was taking a chance showing him this, and evidentially it would not stand up in court. But the only other option was allowing him to walk out the door. Swiftly she clicked through the images, watching his face for a glimmer of recognition. As she brought up James Gatley's image, Isaac's face froze.
It's him, isn't it? Ruby said, pointing to the image of Mason Gatley's son.
The fact the colour had drained from the priest's face told her all she needed to know.
I'm sorry, I've got to go. I hope you find him soon.
Him? Do you mean James? Ruby said, touching his arm as he rose to leave.
Please, Father. I'm not talking about the confessional, so you're not breaking the seal. Is this the man you sat beside in the church pew?
With a faint nod of the head, Isaac turned and headed for the door.
Chapter 53
We're bringing James Gatley in, D.I. Downs said, responding to Ruby's update on her meeting with the priest.
What you told me just confirms that we're right.
She was standing in Downs's office, her eyes roaming over the two-bar heater plugged into the corner of the room.
Where did you get that?
She said, an amused smile touching her lips.
Don't tell me you're cold.
It's borrowed from lost property. Gets nippy in here after midnight,
Downs said, bringing his attention to the paperwork on his desk.
Would you like me to bring in a pipe and slippers, too? Ruby teased.
Or maybe you could go home of an evening and ask Matron to keep you warm.
Downs dropped the pen in his hand and exhaled a terse breath.
Have you just come here to take the piss, or was there something you wanted to ask me?
Sorry, Ruby said, looking anything but.
Has new evidence come to light?
Downs nodded.
That CCTV you asked for, it shows James leaving his kiosk and getting a tube a few hours before Thomas was found. Then it shows him returning to work around the time the police reached the hotel.
You think someone tipped him off?
Perhaps Mason had second thoughts after he gave you the hotel address. Who knows? He lied about speaking to his father, too.
Oh, Ruby said. I wasn't expecting that.
Well, it's all grounds to bring him in. See what he has to say.
He leaned back in his chair. His tie was loosened, his top shirt button undone.
Well done. You've worked hard on this case. We may just have our man.
Team effort, Ruby replied, before her attention was drawn to a knock on the door.
Have you got a minute, Sarge? Luddy said, walking in.
Ruby's eyes fell to his empty hands.
Sure. Fancy putting the kettle on first? She asked, and was met with a smile.
Placing the chipped mug on her desk, Luddy cradled his own before taking a seat. Normally one to hover, he wore an expression of concern that told Ruby all was not well. She rose to shut the door. As she took in Luddy's guarded expression, she had a sinking feeling that a private conversation was ahead.
What's wrong? Have you had a development?
Staring at the froth floating on top of his coffee, Luddy seemed barely able to meet Ruby's eye.
I might be in a spot of trouble, he said, his words barely audible.
Spit it out, then, Ruby said. You're worrying me now.
Luddy nodded, taking a sip from his coffee before placing his mug on the desk.
It's my niece, Laura. She's a volunteer in a helpline.